The Pentagon's new approach to cybersecurity and really the new emphasis on cybersecurity, as I mentioned, changing things all over the agency. What's different about what you're doing at the Army War College when it comes to cyber?
Well, you know, this is an emerging concept, as are information operations and strategic communication. They're evolving rapidly in an information age. We have the next generation of strategic leaders here at the Army War College, senior lieutenant colonels and colonels. And so we have a responsibility to educate them on these concepts so they can better make strategic decisions or advise those that do when they graduate.
Are the people that are coming through there better equipped to be receptive to these concepts when they come in than maybe the groups of people coming in 5 years ago or even 2 or 3 years ago?
Yeah, I think that's absolutely what I've seen. Anecdotally, as folks come in from our theaters of war, they recognize the importance, the speed, the cheap cost of entry into cyberspace, the value of information, and how our enemies use it as an asymmetric weapon of choice. And so they're both attuned to the security requirements, and they're starting to understand the value that, that it has for them if they want to compete and manage that asset in these current environments we're in and in future environments.
One place that the Pentagon has been a little bit apprehensive about even talking about has been the possibility of using cyber, and they've even hesitated to call them cyber weapons up until now, I think. Why do you think that is? Why is it when if our potential enemies had access to a particular weapon, we would want to try to obtain that weapon and figure out how we could use it? And it seems to me from the outside looking in that potential cyber weapons would be the same thing. Why has it been a little bit more difficult, do you think, for different branches of the military or the United States as a country to articulate that as a reasonable thing?
Yeah, I think it's a really good and valid question. I think if you're talking about simply in theaters of war, the use of cyberspace as a domain, whether defensively or offensively, is something I'm sure we're considering. And, you know, obviously you don't want to tip your hand to the capabilities you have to an adversary because he can take advantage of that. And so that's one of the things you have to consider when you put something out there publicly. And I think that's always a consideration. But from a perspective of a national strategy and what we do strategically, there's this idea as well of deterrence. And again, this idea that if you don't know what I can do, perhaps you'll be reticent to step out there and do something to which I might respond to your disadvantage. And so that idea of deterrence is always sort of one where we don't necessarily define the red line that has to be crossed because we can be taken advantage of there as well.
Sure. In an educational environment, is it getting more difficult or is it getting easier to frame for your students the possibilities of what the enemy could potentially do with these kinds of tools?
You know, I don't think so. There's enough open source evidence out there to show what our enemies can do. The difficulty, of course, in the real world outside of education is tying it to a specific nation state because you're so anonymous in this world called the Internet and the World Wide Web. And tracking the attribution back to individuals and in turn to either non-state or state entities is difficult at best, and that's something I think we struggle with. Now, that's a strategic wicked issue and problem, and that's something our students have to deal with. And they might have to make the least worst decision as opposed to the best decision in those cases.
And that's a juxtaposition that leadership, I'm not just in the military either, is not usually trained to make. Normally, leadership training is focused on making the best decision and not the least worst.
And I think you're absolutely correct. And at the point our students come here at their career, again, senior lieutenant colonels and colonels, they've been in a direct leadership situation where the world is more black and white than it is gray. They're about to transition here to this gray world of volatility and uncertainty. And consequently, part of our transition that we hope to get at the end of our curriculum is to show them how to deal in that world, how to gain consensus, compromise, how to deal with the wicked problems that I just discussed.
Mm-hmm. This is really an area where a leader has to be willing to consider what he or she does not know sometimes as much or maybe more so than what he or she does know. When I see descriptions of some of the various tactics that hackers are trying to use to break into systems or to steal information or whatever, I'm reminded of that on a regular basis. Is it harder for you to educate folks in that kind of an environment? Because, you know, when it's a matter of the enemy now has a bigger gun, it's pretty easy to figure out how you try to defend against that. This is a whole different animal.
Yeah, I think, but in some ways it's the same as it has been in the past. Enemies, just as we do, adapt as we move along. And so what we can't become is complacent in assuming that we have a defense that's going to work over time, without recognizing, as we've always said, the enemy has a vote. And they will always look for opportunities to get around the defenses you have set up. And you always have to be attuned to that and adjust your defenses to support that continued vigilance that has to be there. That doesn't matter if that's a kinetic or lethal environment or if we're shooting electrons and bits and bytes across the fiber optic cable.
Dennis, you've let me go pretty far afield here, and I appreciate the latitude. I brought you on because I wanted to learn more about what's changing in the information operations handbook because of the different approaches that the Pentagon is adopting when it comes to cybersecurity. What are those specifically?
I'd like to cover the three areas that are in the primer. And those are information operations, strategic communication, and cyberspace operations. And all of those, again, have evolved very quickly since 9/11 because it's really our first conflicts of the information age where entry is cheap, everybody sort of has a vote, and we have real-time information on the battlefield that everybody sees simultaneously. The changes that are occurring are just really rapid, and I'll focus on cyberspace. We have a new international strategy for cyberspace that came out this year. Followed right on the heels of that was a Department of Defense strategy for operating in cyberspace. So we're seeing our strategic thought within the Beltway come out that allows us to operationalize in the field some of these concepts.
Is that making it easier or harder for you to train folks? It seems to me it would be easier because there is now a codified policy and direction, but is that the case as it actually is?
I don't think it makes it any easier, and I'll tell you why. First of all, it does give us a framework. But to operationalize a strategy requires, of course, an action plan, and the devil's in the details. And consequently, you only want broad guidance from Washington because you don't want to be tied from a centralized location that doesn't provide you the flexibility to execute your plan based on the broad guidance you've received in these strategies. So the strategies help to provide that. But there's a whole lot of work that's being done in a lot of places, like U.S. Cyber Command, I'm sure, today, to operationalize these things so we can employ defensive capabilities as well as others in support of our national strategy and security.